Hello, and welcome to our show today, Ask Margot. I'm Margot de Coatsworth, and I will be your host for this week's episode. Well, actually, I'm going to be your host for every episode. We invite anyone to write in with their questions so we can explore possible solutions here on this show. We always respect confidentiality, so we make up names for our questioners, and today our names will come to you by way of the letter P. Everybody who has asked a question will be granted a radio name beginning with the letter P. By way of introducing myself today, I'd like to talk about something that happened to me just this week. I decided I would give up something for a day. That could be wine, it could be smoking. Well, not for me, I don't smoke. It could be any number of little things that we do regularly that we rely on and maybe are a habit that we'd like to cut back on. For me, I decided I would like not to eat for a day. It was just the decision I made, maybe to show I could do it. Something I wanted to do wasn't for any particular reason. I thought this the night before, probably after quite a significant dinner. Anyway, I got up the next morning and I thought, oh, I don't know if I want to do that, which I often think after making a declaration to myself some kind the night before. But I said to myself, and this is sort of a bit shocking really, but it worked. I said, or are you just too weak to do that? It was kind of hard-hitting and not the kind of thing you might say necessarily to another person. But it's okay to say this kind of thing to yourself. I didn't like it, and I didn't like the suggestion that I was weak. I didn't like to hear myself challenging myself in this respect. But it worked, and every time I thought about just having a little snack or a taste of this or a piece of fruit even, I just said to myself, are you really too weak to do what you said? Goodness, that actually worked, and I went all day without eating. And I realized that it's that pain-pleasure thing. It was more painful for me to think I was too weak to follow through on what I decided to do than the pleasure of having something to eat. The pain was greater than that pleasure. And there was my fridge winking at me every time I opened the fridge door. So, if you are doing a bit of a dance with a habit that you'd like to be sure you're on top of, maybe you want to have a day free from something. Try that trick and say to yourself, are you just too weak to do that? Doesn't sound like any kind of good therapy, does it? You'd have to call it aversion therapy or something ghastly. You know, I've decided that there's a therapy for almost everything. Sound therapy, music therapy, colour therapy, hypnotherapy. We often in my family talk about slap therapy. If somebody does something inappropriate, we'll say, well, clearly they need a bit of slap therapy. This is a joke, you understand. It has nothing to do with my serious business, therapy business. Actually, slap therapy is a physical thing. I may have mentioned that before. Korean women invented it or do it. They slap their faces quite hard in order to stimulate blood flow and improve the luminescence and youth of their skin. I haven't tried that one. I hope in this show you can tell when I'm just joking, because I would not like to be seen to be serious when I talk about some of this kind of stuff. Anyway, that's my slightly questionable introduction for the day, my challenge to myself that did actually work. In this episode, we're going to address questions about work culture, about how to require change from ourselves, about how to call someone out when you need to, and about the unfortunate link between being very overweight and longevity. Our first question is from Patrick, who's concerned about the culture within businesses that he's seen and that seems to be so negative, undermining, unsupportive, and unappreciative. It doesn't feel right to him. He wants to know the best ways to look at changing that. What should he be trying to implement in his business in order to create a better culture that has been in existence, probably since the business's beginning? An interesting question and a very relevant one, Patrick, because we see so many people who feel devalued at work. and don't like going to work because they don't feel satisfied and they don't feel valued. They don't feel they're in a supportive environment. I've been doing some research on this recently about another subject, and I came across a man who's very wealthy and very successful. He owns a number of businesses which are considered to be some of the best working environments in the country he works in. I was very interested to see what his philosophy was and how that has become a part of the fabric of his businesses. This is what I found, and I know it will help you, Patrick, in thinking about how to shift the culture where you're working. And remember, the workplace culture flows down from the culture of the boss. So if you're the boss, you have the power and the responsibility to change things. I particularly like the way this man speaks in an inclusive way. He talks about us and we, so he's including himself and in everything and not setting himself above his employees. Also, his philosophy is to do well and do good, which is a kind of movement. I absolutely love it because it means by all means make money, but with money comes huge responsibility. And he is a man who takes it very seriously. Here's what these businesses of his are based on. Always raising the level of awareness. I think there's nothing sadder than people who think they have nothing to improve on and nothing to learn. The other thing he says is the inches we need are everywhere around us. I guess that's trying to say making incremental improvement is what is needed. He says responding with a sense of urgency is the ante to play. Some of this language is quite interesting, but I think he's just saying always front up as soon as possible. Every client, every time, no exceptions, no excuses. Isn't that great? He's obsessed with finding a better way. He says yes before no. Well, this is what he's teaching his people. Ignore the noise. It's not about who is right, it's about what is right. We are they. That's very cool. He says, you have to take the roast out of the oven. Now, I wasn't sure what that meant, but I looked it up and I think it means you can't just cook the roast, you've got to take it out and serve it, so you've got to follow through. You'll see it when you believe it. We'll figure it out. There's always a solution. Every second counts. Numbers and money follow. They do not lead. That's pretty cool. A penny saved is a penny. Oh, that's such an interesting one. I didn't know what that meant. Usually it's a penny saved as a penny, I don't know, earned something. But I wondered if you said a penny saved is not a pound or a penny saved is still just a penny. I think it's about the small increments. Everywhere you can save is a good thing. He says, we eat our own dog food. I did look that up. Some of you may know that. It means we use our own products. Simplicity is genius. Innovation is rewarded. Execution is worshipped. That's interesting. And the last one, do the right thing. Well, that's a pretty comprehensive list. It doesn't talk about remuneration for staff, and I think that's a key one. People stay longer and are more invested in a business if they share the benefit of that business being successful. That might be by way of a bonus, that might be shares or profit share. People need to know that they're worth more than just an hourly rate. I think feeling a kind of ownership of the place you work is important because it means you care about it. Often I walk into a shop and if I get poor service or I see someone trying to close the door and shuffle everybody out before or just on the dot of their closing time, I often think, well, you're clearly not the owner. Wouldn't it be great to have people who worked for you who cared about the business like an owner would? Surely that's the dream. Well, that doesn't come for free. What you would have to do is to make sure you heard what people wanted and needed, and that you discussed it with them, gave them what they required and what they deserved. We think about time and money, but we don't really think so much about time and life. But I think if somebody works for you, say 40 hours a week, it's not just 40 hours of their time they're giving you, it's 40 hours of their life. And that's profound. It all comes back to valuing each other. We need to get better at this, and we need to say no to things that don't satisfy our need to be fully valued. I have a book by a chap called Mark Allen, and he maintains that every person who works in an organization, be it a post office or a cleaner in a corporate building, anybody who works for a business in any capacity should share in the profit of that business. He says businesses should give away 10%, 30% should go to the owners, 30% should go to all the people working in the business, and 30% should go back into the business for growth. He says that every time this has been implemented, the business has become more and not less profitable. Sometimes people get fearful of changing the status quo for fear they'll lose ground or lose money. The man at the top might own the business, but it doesn't work without those who operate it. If you can change the whole culture and share, apparently everybody benefits. That does mean that CEOs taking whopping multi-million dollar salaries need to be doing that only in proportion to the employees doing exceptionally well also. Patrick, I hope some of these ideas resonate with you and that you can begin to implement them incrementally into your business. Thank you for that question. It was a goodie. Our next question today was asked by someone, let's call her Poppy. She was upset because she had lost someone close to her. And as we often do, she asked the question, why did they have to go? Why did they have to die before their time? Today, I'm going to talk about this simply from a physical, practical level. This chap who had gone was very, very overweight and had been so for a long time. He's the second person I know who died in a state of being excessively overweight. Now, I will qualify this by saying we love people no matter what their size, shape. We care about them. We value them. But the hard fact remains that if you, as an extremely overweight person who could change that, make a life choice to stay in that state, you are, in fact, saying to yourself, I possibly won't live to see my grandchildren grow. I may not see my grandchildren at all, because my heart is going to say, and I mean your physical heart, is going to say, I can't take this anymore. I was not designed to carry this weight. I'm not strong enough, and I can't support you anymore. I know that sounds a harsh thing to say, but someone in my family was in the same situation and he died. And I thought to myself, well, you must have known in your heart of hearts, that's your emotional heart, that you would not see your grandbabies. I'm going to get tougher now. Was it worth it? No. If the answer is no, 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 and of course that it is, then you must get help and support and change it. So if you're in that situation and you want to live a long and happy life and see your grandbabies, then you need to address carrying more weight around your body than it's designed for. And our bodies are pretty amazing. They put up with a lot of stuff from us. I'm not saying it's easy. I think it's incredibly difficult. And the older people get, the harder it is to shift weight. The time to start the process is now, today. I remember once hearing Oprah interview someone who had been very large and she had lost a significant amount of weight, enough to get on Oprah. And I recall hearing something that I have never forgotten. Oprah said to her, "You didn't think it was about the food, did you?" She knew that there was an underlying reason. That's where my training comes in, of course. So if you need help with that, please email me. This show is about getting on track and living life fully. I can say that no matter what your situation, there's always a solution. There's always a way and there's always help. So don't despair about anything. Just reach out and say, I'm here and I need some help. You may already know where to get that help. I'm just going to spin off a little bit now, thinking about where we get help. I'm going to talk about alcohol. I've seen people who no longer drink because it was a choice they've made to stay in control. A number of people in my world choose not to drink. You probably know people like that too. Never push someone to drink who's choosing not to. Never fill someone's glass if they say no. It's actually wrong. If you've listened to my show before, you'll know that my whole philosophy is based on how we identify ourselves, the words we use, and the story we tell to ourselves and about ourselves. That's where the power lies. So if you've been saying, I'm overweight or I drink too much, then change that. You have to change those words. Sometimes I've watched a movie on TV where they have AA meetings. People sit in a circle and they start off by saying, I'm so-and-so and I am an alcoholic. Now, I understand that people are acknowledging something that's probably taken them a long time to front up to. I get that. But when they're in those meetings, they've usually gotten to that place and now they're looking for a new way to identify themselves. I'm sure that AA as an organisation does a great deal of good, and how wonderful to have that kind of circular support and somebody guiding them in those kinds of meetings. But I personally believe that the principle of that is wrong because you have to change identifying yourself with something you no longer want to something you do want. You have to say, I am free from, or I am no longer, or yes, I was, but now I'm this. It would be better to say, I was once addicted to alcohol, and now I no longer am. Not today, not tomorrow, not again. It's a much stronger place to be. It's changing the thinking behind the programming. It's speaking to your subconscious mind about who you choose to be, who you intend to be, and how you now identify yourself. I guess you could say, well, who am I to have such an opinion to criticize a successful international organization that helps people? Of course, that's not my intention. But imagine if we could have such meetings where people who have had issues they've struggled with and that have dominated their lives, and they came together in a circle like they do at AA, and they say together, I am now free. Well, I can feel the power of that, even as I say those words. Instead of just feeling that they're not alone and verbalizing their story and their struggle, they could be saying, my past is not my future. I love that idea. All kinds of things have dominated our lives that shouldn't have and absolutely have no right to be there. Which brings us to our next question. Recently, I had this question from peers about someone who spoke to their partner in a very dismissive way. You may think that's nothing new, but this was a particular social situation and it wasn't expected and it was not being filtered, even though there were other people around. The person who had been spoken to thus kind of scuttled off with their tail between their legs, having been reprimanded by somebody. It felt yuck. To me as an observer, and I'm sure it did to the recipient of this belittling comment, it just was awful. What do you do in a situation like that? I've always thought, peers, that we can challenge or correct people if we do it with care and a lightness that doesn't back them into a corner or make them feel worthless. Nobody ever should be made to feel worthless. It should be on a t-shirt somewhere. I make people feel worthy. We're often taken by surprise in such situations and not quite ready to respond when something crops up like that that's so unexpected. Of course, it's not always unexpected to for people to be treated like that. You know, the kind of behaviour where people are shut down till their opinion doesn't actually matter, corrected privately and publicly. So if you have someone in your life who's treating you like that, or if you're the one doing it, know that that is not acceptable. No matter how long it's been going on, or actually no matter what you have done or what you think they have done. Sometimes people respond with, oh, you made me do it, or you shouldn't have pushed so hard, or you shouldn't be arguing with me, or you know I'm right, that kind of thing. Some people think being provoked justifies a bad reaction. It does not. It never does. I'm not saying that a bad reaction might be avoided if people took more care not to provoke for the sake of provoking. Do you get that one? Don't provoke somebody if you know they're going to go off. Say what you need to say in a measured, calm, rational way. But don't get stuck in and have a go, because that never works. It doesn't work with parents and children. It doesn't work with adults to each other. It doesn't work with couples. Think before you speak, even if you feel justified. Put things in a way that gives someone somewhere to go. If you back them into a corner, they're going to defend themselves. That's how we are wired. They'll either kick back or they'll shut down completely. Nobody wins. Of course, if it looks like it might bubble over into something physical, you just get out and say, excuse me, and you leave. If you just need to check somebody so they don't think what they're doing is okay and then keep doing it, you say, it's time for change. I've changed and it's not okay for you to speak to me like that. You need to speak to me with respect and I will do the same for you. If you've never seen anything like that to this person before who's challenging you, it'll take them off guard, and that's a good thing. Catch that moment and run with it. You could just go all out and say, I'm a person of unlimited value. You must respect me and treat me as such. Or, my personal favourite, I don't ever want to hear you speak to me like that again. Or, do not speak to me in that tone of voice. That's a good one for children. They stop, they listen, they pay attention, and they don't keep doing it. And if they won't stop, then you don't need them in your life. Probably that doesn't work with children. You actually don't. Now, that can be tough if you've done something silly like marry them or make 6 babies for them, but it doesn't change your value. In your situation, you'll know what will work. It may simply be, don't talk to me like that. I can't respond when you don't treat me with respect. Or, I'll give you time to reconsider that comment. You see, you're putting the ball back in their court. You're not letting them have that last word. A wise man called Jefferson Fisher would say, make them say it again, so it spotlights exactly what they're doing. Could you repeat that? And then he'd say, did you mean that to belittle me or to be hurtful? Hurtful is not really a word I use. It's true, of course, so it does hurt. But it seems quite soft to me. You must respond with a challenge. Look them in the eye. Require a response. If they're too intimidating, don't look at them in the eye. But still say your piece. You have a right to be respected. We all do, every single one of us. And we need to require it of each other to treat each other like that. I know that sometimes I sound like a sort of lone voice in the wilderness when there's such a lot of trish-trash out there everywhere. But I'm fully convinced that life is designed to work for us and not against us. We just have to find out how to make that so. If you're an observer of this dismissive interchange between other people, you might look at that person dishing it out and say, oh, that seems rather dismissive or even a tiny bit belittling, Joe or Sue or whoever. That'll work. Even saying, that's a bit rough, will call attention to the unacceptable nature of the comment. Give that a go, peers. If you have other questions for me, send them in to admin@coastaccessradio.com. margotunlimited.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com. Margo with a T. I love to hear your feedback, and just let me know if there's something you're stuck on. I'll certainly answer your question. I may come up with something you've never thought of, or you may just feel encouraged by my response to follow your instinctive lead and get to the solution you need. I'm going to give you another one of my power blessings today. This one is for harmony, and it seems a fit for all that we have covered in this episode. Harmony. I now declare myself to be an irresistible magnet for harmony. I sow peace, calm, tranquility, and accord wherever I go and whatever I do. Discord, criticism, judgment, and negativity dissolve in my presence and melt to nothing. Connection and care are the ripple effect of my daily life. That's quite nice. Thank you for being with me today. Let's finish by hearing from the Word, something the universe wants us to know in this moment. Your state will always reflect your outcome. What you think will affect your mood. What you see must be what is in the unseen, what you want to see, what you know to be there, if only you were to see it. A follows B. Outcome follows income. You need to understand that you generate all that shows up, and many wonderful things have shown up. Be deliberate in your choosing, because you are creating your life with your choices. That is your power. Your voice is like an echo, and it will reverberate and return to you. What you project is an echo. It ripples out and then bounces back. Be a creator by choice. Thank you very much, and see you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.